What?
College matters.
What?
College matters. Matters.
Really?
For sure. College matters.
Alma matters. Matters.
I would definitely have to attribute a large deal of it to my parents, both of which are professors. And mostly they kind of taught me and raised me growing up. Like, asking questions is not a bad thing. Asking questions is not a rude thing. And just kind of being genuinely curious about the world is a completely natural thing to do. And they kind of encouraged and fostered that love of learning more. And even if a question doesn't have a clear use case, just trying to answer it, trying to give the best guess towards it.
That is Philip Post, a Goldwater scholar studying electrical computer engineering at Olin College of Engineering in Needham, Massachusetts. Hello, I'm your host, Venkat Raman. Philip liked to build things, like growing popsicle sticks in elementary school. He had many tinkering projects as he was growing up. Technology just fascinated him. At the same time, he loved the humanities. He loved history. When he started applying to colleges, he hadn't quite figured out whether he wanted to take the liberal arts route or pursue engineering. Philip joins our podcast to share his undergraduate college journey at Olin College, researching government databases, winning the Goldwater Scholarship, internship at FCC, and his advice for high schoolers. Now, before we jump into the podcast, here are the high fives, five highlights from the podcast.
Experimental learning experience is what really kind of makes Olin unique, and just how kind of relaxed everything is, just the focus on learning rather than a grade point average.
Yeah.
In the end, my decision was between University of Southern California's Viterbi engineering program and Olin, and both very exceptional engineering programs, great people. The deal breaker for me was just the fact that USC only guarantees housing for 2 years in LA, and I really didn't want to go through the stress and anxiety of finding housing in LA. Just the fact that satellites need to communicate with Earth. So really, regulatory-wise, they're treated like a cell tower 2,000 plus kilometers in the sky. And they have a very kind of antiquated database just purely because of how old it is. And because of that, no one really knew how many filings there were, what was happening to these filings, like how long were companies like SpaceX waiting to get certainty on whether or not they could launch their satellites. I would talk to about my friends sometimes, but again, it's very dry stuff. Like, I'm talking about like HTML and like spectrum allocation, and they're just like, sounds interesting, I guess, right? So it's hard to get that from people which aren't super into government databases, which is the vast majority of people. So to get that from a recognized like scholarship kind of filled that void. So really, while you're in high school, I know it's so difficult to like figure out where do I want to, society is making me decide at 18 what I want to potentially do for the rest of my life. This is terrifying. I was in the same shoes. I was like, this, who came up with this system? This is stupid. but the important thing is that you're not locked in stone in college. So it's important to keep as much of an open mind as possible.
These were the high fives brought to you by
College Matters.
Alma Matters.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. For my newsletter, visit almamatters.substack.com. Now, I'm sure you want to hear the entire podcast with Philip. So without further ado, here is Philip Post.
So let's start with your college experience so far. Tell us about how the last few years have been.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I've definitely enjoyed it. I think Olin has kind of been the best college I possibly could have gone to for a few reasons. I mean, Olin is a very weird, unique, and quite frankly, janky place, being 400 students, all of them engineers, mm-hmm. and being on a campus where my longest commute is 5 minutes at most. but really the things which stand out to me most is just definitely project-based learning. Mm-hmm. One of my least favorite parts of high school was constant testing, and kind of all of the anxiety associated with that. Yeah. And at Olin, like, we have maybe a few quizzes every now and then, but the vast majority of your grade is determined by doing a project, whether that's like a mini report or like actually building something. So for my multivariable calculus class, instead of taking a multivariable calculus test, we defined boats using equations, and then we 3D printed them and then raced them for our final exam. The performance of the boats was not actually what determined our grade, but really just that learning, experimental learning experience is what really kind of makes Olin unique, and just how kind of relaxed everything is, just the focus on learning rather than a grade point average.
So tell me why you picked Olin College. Why did you end up there?
Yeah, so I mean, I personally applied to a lot of schools because, I mean, it was an uncertain time, but also just the, I applied like, let's see, I'm class of 2025. So I guess I applied like 2020, 2021. So definitely still very much so COVID. Yeah. But overall, I have a brother who's 4 years older, and I had watched him go through the college application process. Mm-hmm. And so for me, since I'm the second child, we were much more prepared. And also we were like, well, you only get to do this in your life once. Might as well have fun with it and like apply to as many schools I have the time for. I applied to one in-state school. That was Clemson University. And that was, I guess, what you'd call my safety.
Yeah.
And then all of the other schools were just kind of a hodgepodge of random schools across the country. Not all necessarily even had engineering. Because at this point, I was still debating like whether or not I wanted to go like a liberal arts route and more kind of like data science, or if I wanted to go full engineering. But in the end, my decision was between University of Southern California's Vercarby engineering program and Olin. And both very exceptional engineering programs, great people. The deal breaker for me was just the fact that USC only guarantees housing for 2 years in LA. And I really didn't want to go through the stress and anxiety of finding housing in LA. So, Olin guarantees for 4 years. So I was like, great, that's one less thing to think about. Why not?
Let's talk about your high school. Let's talk about the interests you had, what kind of stuff you were into. And you said you were debating between liberal arts and engineering. So tell us a little bit about all that.
Yeah, so my high school experience had pretty much zero engineering exposure. Mm-hmm. So my high school, didn't have robotics. It didn't have like any of those more kind of like STEM clubs that you would see at definitely like more high schools in Northeast or around major cities.
Right.
And the only club I was really in, other than I played tennis for 2 years. But the only club I was really in was an ethics club. And this wasn't competitive ethics. This was just me bringing a ton of snacks into a room with just random people from around my school. And we would like have an ethical debate about kind of the brief of that day. So like it could be, for example, right before COVID happened, like came to the United States, we saw the news reports of them, of their kind of being quarantines on cruise ships. So we talked about kind of like, when is it ethically okay to just kind of restrict a person's freedom in the interest of like public health and stuff, us not knowing that that would be what we were actually debating in a few weeks' time. But really in high school, kind of majority of my time was taken up focusing on kind of taking all of the AP courses. A thing I realized very quickly was I actually did better the harder the course was. So like college prep versus honors versus AP, I would usually do better in AP than I would do in the same course at a lower level. I just liked the challenge. I liked learning more, and I liked the teachers that taught those courses. But for anyone like scared about like going to engineering stuff, I had zero coding background. I did not know how to code, and math for me was still like a tool to use, but not something that I could just like pull out of my brain and do proofs right.
So now, what was this debate you said about in your mind about how to proceed, where to go, liberal arts, engineering? Where did that come from if you didn't have much of an engineering exposure?
It was kind of like ever since I was growing up, at the same time, I kind of had like mini tinkering projects where I would like build things. I mean, of course, like elementary school, it started with just like me hot gluing popsicle sticks. And then in high school, it turned to me like doing a little bit of computer aided design or 3D CAD and kind of like 3D printing stuff. And so I kind of got exposed more and more and was always fascinated by technology and tech things. I didn't always necessarily understand how they worked, but at the very least, I was curious about them. So in my mind, it was like, well, if I'm interested in stuff, the person that works with the stuff is an engineer. So I was definitely torn though, because I loved the arts and humanities. I loved history. I loved talking to people. So for me, I was like, I feel like I can go either way between a liberal arts or an engineering education, and I would be happy with either path.
So so in the end, you ended up picking Olin for engineering.
Yep.
So what was the, what are the trump card there, if I may say that?
Definitely, again, like project-based learning was a huge sell. And also just the concept that doing engineering does not preclude me from doing arts and humanities. This may be getting ahead of myself, but at Olin, you can take courses at Wellesley, the all-women's liberal arts school. And so that was kind of my balance of being like, okay, I'm going to get all of the technical expertise that an engineering degree brings. But at the same time, I can take as many liberal arts courses I want at Wellesley. So it was kind of like the best of both worlds, both that taste of liberal arts education and debate, but still gaining that technical background.
So tell us about the transition to college, to Olin. How was that?
Definitely kind of, I would say like good or bad, just a lot, definitely a lot. It's kind of like, I mean, I'm sure everyone's gone through this when they come to college. It's a time where you're kind of redefining and debating who I am, who I want to be, because there's kind of that person that you sell yourself, both to yourself and others in high school, of who you are. But when you come to college, especially when you're far away from home, you have a blank slate to redefine that and really kind of gut check. Do I want to continue to be this person that I've portrayed myself? And when I came to Olin, it was mostly, I am who I am, but I still don't know how I fit within the school. Again, only 300, 400 people, it can be quite kind of exhausting because you will see the same people every single day, every single day. You have no hope of being anonymous at Olin. Everyone will know you, for better or for worse. So it was really just kind of getting used to that. And also knowing that the Olin student body is, of course, engineering kids coming to an experimental education-focused college are extremely like nerdy, and you get a whole mix of people there, you can't really take one mold to anyone at Olin. So also just getting used to that, because like I was used to just the traditional high school experience where you kind of had your cliques and you had your stereotypes. So you knew generally what box a person fits into. At Olin, I just had to throw that out and accept, okay, Oliners, each one's going to be their own different beast. But it was a really fun adjustment at the same time.
Now, how did you find the classes, the academics in general?
Definitely the first semester is rough, not because it's hard, but because you're getting fully ingrained and kind of unlearning everything you learned in high school, not from so much a content perspective, but from a methodology perspective. Instead of homework, homework, test, homework, homework, test, instead of that, it's interactive class session, and then two or three major projects a semester. And during that entire time, you're going to be talking to your classmates and working with them every single day. So really just kind of getting used to that in each one of your classes is the hardest part. And that's why like the intro classes at Olin have kind of a lot of mixed feelings, because on one hand, you do a lot of cool stuff like designing a boat using calculus, or we have another intro class called Design Nature, where you use like rubber bands, wood, and CAD to create kind of hoppers that replicate the movement of a specific animal and jump up into the sky. And first semester, it's all pass and record. So there's no pressure at all of grades. I mean, Olin itself is not harsh on GPA, so it's not too much of a concern, but even more so, it's kind of a semester for limit testing and seeing how much extracurricular activities you want to do on top of classes.
You briefly mentioned your peers. What were the professors like? What are the professors like?
Oh, the professors at Olin are completely exceptional. Like, the student body is great. And then on top of that, you probably, like our Olin's faculty lineup rivals schools that have 50,000 people. I think it's partly our proximity to kind of MIT and the whole like Northeast like research area. So anyone that kind of needs a job and just wants to work at a more kind of experimental, fun education place kind of gets filtered down to Olin. And because of that, almost all of our professors are either like MIT PhD or at that level of both like quality and research. So plus a student to faculty ratio, I forgot what it is, but it can't be much more than like six or seven students per professor. So I have lunch with, I talk with professors all the time. Like if I need extra help, I can just schedule an instantaneous hour or two session with them to work it out, which at most other schools, I feel like is somewhat unheard of, the amount of access we get to our professors.
So let's talk about undergraduate research. How did you get into that?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely have to attribute a large deal of it to my parents, both of which are professors. And mostly they kind of taught me and raised me growing up. Like asking questions is not a bad thing. Asking questions is not a rude thing. And just kind of being genuinely curious about the world is a completely natural thing to do. And they kind of encouraged and fostered that love of learning more. And even if a question doesn't have a clear use case, just trying to answer it, trying to give the best guess towards it. And that kind of formed to me being like, I noticed with research, a lot of people kind of have fear and hesitation that, oh no, I possibly couldn't do scientific research, or that's much too intimidating. But really, I kind of got desensitized to that. It was just kind of research is this fun thing where I have found this, or I've like geeked out on this thing, and I now want to share it with everyone else. I want to make a contribution to this amazing community. So that was kind of like my background coming into Olin. And then I got instantly, even before I became an Olin student, I became ingrained within Olin's research, one of Olin's research labs. We have a research lab called Olin Satellite Spectrum Technology Policy Group, OSSTP. I know it's a mouthful. And the leader of that lab, Whitney Lohmeyer, I had met her during one of the pre-college sessions. Olin's a bit weird in that in addition to the regular admissions process, we bring all of the invited students to the college campus to further kind of like vet and do project-based learning with them, just to really make sure that they want to come to a very weird small school before they actually commit. But I met Whitney at that event, and then I sent a thank you email follow-up. And again, at this point, I didn't know if I was going to Olin. And her immediate response was, "It was great talking to you too. Would you like to join my research lab?" So like high school senior Philip here, I'm like, is this a scam? I was like, is research this easy to do? Or like all labs at Olin like this? So at first I was like quite suspicious, but it was summer at this point, and I joined the weekly like meetings. And at first, absolutely zero stuff actually made sense to me. I was like, I don't know the terms that they're saying. They keep on talking about satellites and like wireless stuff, but I don't know what's coming out of their mouths. But eventually I just kept on going to meetings, and it got to the point that I was like, oh wait, that's actually not that scary. I actually understand it. And again, just kind of approaching things with that knowledge doesn't hurt you. Instead, it's just better to like find things out and kind of satiate your curiosity. Right. And when I finally decided to come to Olin, I kind of hit the ground running, where I was like, okay, I do want to stick with OSSTP and I want to continue doing research with them. And that's what really got me started with research at Olin through this research laboratory.
What kind of stuff do you do? So what are the kind of fun stuff that you've done so far?
Yeah, so again, one of the great things at Olin is we do not compete with graduate students. It's completely undergraduate. Right. And we have that amazing a student to faculty ratio, and each one of our professors brings at least one research project that they've been working on. So each professor has usually 4 to 5 research positions to do research with them. Mm-hmm. And Whitney is a very like trusting and exceptional person. Also, one thing that may seem weird to anyone listening is I'm going to refer to professors with a first name. At Olin, all professors are on a complete first name basis with their students, which is, again, just kind of shows our culture and the fact that there are pretty much no barriers hierarchy wise. But Whitney is a person that places a great deal of trust into researchers. And if you propose a research project, she'll support you and see it done. And for me, that came in the form of any company that wants to file for permission to launch a satellite into space in the United States, say like SpaceX or any one of these other companies, has to go to the Federal Communications Commission, not NASA, not the FAA, the Communications Commission, which sounds unintuitive, but it's just the fact that satellites need to communicate with Earth. So really, regulatory wise, they're treated like a cell tower 2000 plus kilometers in the sky. And they have a very kind of antiquated database just purely because of how old it is. And because of that, no one really knew how many filings there were, what was happening to these filings, like how long were companies like SpaceX waiting to get certainty on whether or not they could launch their satellites? Like really important questions we just didn't have insight into, because it was like a really old mix of like JSON and not even HTML. And I started by first manually scraping this data just by hand, like copy into a spreadsheet. But then I was doing the math. I'm like, it's taking me a half an hour per filing. There's tens of thousands of filings. By the time I'm dead, I'll maybe finish half of the website, assuming max productivity. And then, so this was my first year. A junior at the time named Gatti saw yeah. what I was doing, and she told me, pretty much like, "You poor thing, you can automate this." And I was like, "Please tell me more." So that turned into us working for a year plus writing Python code, which went mm-hmm. through and scraped every single filing off the database. So what would have taken me a lifetime could be run in a few hours. And then we had the data, and that was only half of the problem. So then yeah. I spent another year with a data set that no one else had, working with a team of Olin students to clean it and graph it. And so far, this data set has yielded two papers, one which we just got accepted with the journal Spacecraft and Rockets, and then mm-hmm. another paper I'm actually presenting this Saturday in Washington, D.C. at a telecommunications policy research conference. Awesome. Again, it kind of started randomly. It started very like benignly, just like scraping a spreadsheet, but then that snowballed into multiple research papers and a full-on team of people that were kind of unified in this goal of, yeah, this information is important. It's important to know how common resources are being used. Are they being uh-huh. used fairly? And how can we get this information to the people and kind of democratize it? It was a huge uh-huh. driving factor behind that.
So somewhere here you applied for the Goldwater Scholarship. So tell us about that. Why did you apply?
Yeah, so that was... I'm trying to think of the kind of, yeah, so that process kind of started my sophomore year. And just for like some context, Goldwater Scholarship, you can either apply to your sophomore or junior year. The only difference is that your sophomore year, it's much harder to get it, because if you do receive it, you get a Goldwater Scholarship for 2 years. You get it for both your junior and senior year. Whereas if you receive it your junior year, you only get for the senior year. So to start with, another advantage of the Olin is, since we have so few students, there's very few other people that apply to these scholarships. I forgot what it was for Goldwater, but I think like a max of 4 people from each school can apply. And I think Olin only had 4 people that really wanted to apply. We didn't have to have like any drama-filled fight to the death battle of being like, no, I'm a better fit for Goldwater. But basically... Sure. I forgot how I heard about it. I think either like it was either my brother or the staff at Olin said, "Hey, there's this scholarship for undergraduate researchers that want to go like do further research or maybe get their PhD." I was like, "Huh, mm-hmm. that sounds like me." it would be nice to like have some more funding towards that life goal, since getting a higher diploma doesn't really pay for your retirement.
Right.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, I'll apply. So that started kind of beginning of my sophomore year. So kind of fall, I was working with Olin just to make sure that I was qualified and that they were okay with me applying. Because since it's for people that do undergraduate research, they want to like check, like, okay, do you actually have any research? Some common stuff. And then it turned into me kind of doing the actual Goldwater application, which I did over winter break and submitted then. And it was a lot like doing my college app. It was a lot of essays plus me kind of detailing each of my publications or submitted papers or co-authorships and pretty much like my contribution. In addition to that, giving them an example research paper, really kind of outlining what I do. And most of that for me was just what I've done through OSSTP, what I just described to you. Like really, information is at a loss when it's behind a paywall. It's so much better when we make it accessible and allow people to kind of analyze it and talk about it. So just writing about, hey, like, it's really important for us to democratize this information, to make it accessible. And it being on an antiquated website, not at all means that it should stay there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. And so that was pretty much the whole spiel that I wrote my Goldware application. Then I submitted it. And then I think I heard back in, was it May? Or it was a bit before that. And I just got the email. It's like email from Goldwater Foundation. And then I just opened the email and I use Outlook email, which if there's congratulations, it shoots up confetti. So at first I didn't even read the email. I just saw confetti. I was like, well, that can't be too bad. it's like same when you get your college acceptance. It's like, you're not really reading the words. You're like, is there confetti or not? If there's no confetti, I'm in trouble. And when I saw that, I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. This is insane. And was in really disbelief for a really long time.
You obviously got the scholarship, but why do you think they picked you? Why do you think you were selected?
I think it's, if again, I was not at all expecting to get it. My mental plan was Goldwater. Usually if you apply your sophomore year, you get denied. But if you reapply your junior year, what I heard colloquially is you tend to perform better. Like your application is better well received for people that reapply. They like that. So I was in the mindset, okay, I'll get this out of the way and this will be a problem for junior year Philip. I was not at all expecting to get it. But the reason why I think I did get it is really, I mean, of course, thanks to the exceptional people we have at Olin, it's hard not to do amazing things when you're surrounded by such exceptional, driven, funny, again, very weird, but exceptional people. And I think it was just the fact of how much research and how much I had done by my sophomore year, when usually people get started on research junior or senior year as purely a means to the end of getting into grad school. And if I was to like purely like speculate why, it was as a sophomore, they may have seen like the amount of research is competitive with what we would expect from a junior.
Now that you have the scholarship, what does it mean to you? What kind of difference is it making?
The biggest thing for me has just kind of been, it was just very heartfelt to get recognition that what you're doing is valuable to people and that people recognize it. Because I think with anything we do in life, even if we do it purely intrinsically, it's nice when someone says, hey, I value your work, or I think what you're doing is important. Like that means more than probably anything in the world when someone tells that to you. But doing undergraduate research is a very unsexy, thankless thing. And I am researching government databases, which is like ultra unsexy and unappealing. So I would talk to about my friends sometimes, but again, it's very dry stuff. Like I'm talking about like HTML and like spectrum allocation. And they're just like, sounds interesting, I guess, right? So it's hard to get that from people which aren't super into government databases, which is the vast majority of people. So to get that from a recognized like scholarship kind of filled that void. It told me, hey, what you're doing is really valuable, and we're recognizing that.
You mentioned FCC. Have you been interning with them, or have you gone to the other side to do some stuff? Or?
Yeah, funny that you mentioned that. So this last summer, so my first summer at Olin between first year to sophomore year, I just did summer research at Olin. And then this last summer, I actually went and interned for the Federal Communications Commission. But it was actually kind of funny because I didn't actually intern explicitly for the Space Bureau, the people that do satellite applications, because since I've done nonstop satellite research for the last like 2.5 years, I had so many like potential conflicts of interest that they were like, so I got placed in the Office of Economic Analysis, which basically, the short version is if anyone like needs to design an auction or ask how should we distribute this like loan or subsidy, basically all of those economic or kind of statistic based questions go to this office.
And what did you have to do?
It was quite, funnily, I'll save it for last, but funnily enough, I actually did end up working on a space project. but before then, to start off, first, let me start by saying if anyone wants to like do public service or work for the government or thinks that they may want to do that at some point, just go and do it for an internship, especially your sophomore year, I would say is kind of an ideal time. Because companies aren't going to quite want you until you're a junior. And when you're a sophomore, government will more than be happy to take you. And the people in government are just exceptionally nice and skilled. And it's just a really kind of fun, rewarding place to learn and build up your skill set. So to start off with, I worked on the broadband map. The FCC recently rolled out a whole map of the United States where they show kind of, this is what your internet speed should be. This is what you expect. And it also had the option of saying, hey, if it's not this, tell us and we'll go confirm, because like to a certain extent, companies have some legal liability that they have to guarantee the speeds that they actually advertise. That's one of the FCC's roles. And it's really important because I mean, if you're not getting good internet access, can't really do much else. And my specific role was to create a model to recommend where can we go to do further testing in areas where we're not receiving any feedback from people. It's a really hard question because instead of asking who's telling us they have issues, we go test there. It was who are we missing? How can we find them? And how can we proactively test in those areas? So it was just a lot of code, mostly just combining a lot of different data sets of saying, okay, currently we're receiving a lot of reports of data tests in areas that may be wealthier or may have higher education. Like there may be disparities in the data from what we expect from the vast majority of the United States. So then it was, how can we go in and fix this data so it's more equitable, so it's more representative of what our country actually looks like? That was one project. I also worked on the 988, which is the crisis hotline number. For me, that was a really big passionate thing because mental health access in the United States is so, so important. And really what I was pushing for was for us to do better data collection of who's using the number. So not like names or anything, but rather like how many phone calls are we getting a day? Like statistics like that, just so that we can know, like, are we meeting everyone's needs? Like what's the average wait time before someone gets on the phone with someone who can provide them with help and resources? Really just kind of not even doing data analysis, but rather putting in the work to start that conversation of how can we get this data? How can we get the data necessary to make these indispensable tools and resources that save lives even better so that no one's left out. And then lastly, I did end up writing on a space project. Another plug for working in government for an internship is all federal agencies are completely overworked. They do not have enough people to do the jobs that they have. So sometimes you'll get a really huge project like given to you with all the resources and support of the people around you. It's like, go do your best. We want to see what you can do. And for me, that came in the form of there's the IADC, which is a UN committee on orbital space debris. And they had pretty much asked the United States, okay, what's your position on orbital space debris? Like, what's your policies? What's your positions? And kind of what views do you take on where we should be heading in orbital debris? Should we have like stricter collision avoidance measures? Should we restrict the number of satellites which we launch up into space? Like stuff like that. And someone from the Space Bureau was like, hey, Philip, why don't you take this? So that was like 2 weeks of me furiously reading NASA documentation and also looking at every single protocol that currently companies are taking in the United States. Because there's recommendations, but there's no set rules on like, when and how should you avoid running into another satellite? Like pretty important stuff, but there still isn't a firm legal framework for what to do. And basically my role is to write that response to the United Nations, kind of outlining, well, this is our current recommendations. This is what companies are currently doing. And then looking forward, this is what we would like to see. And again, it was just amazing the amount of confidence and trust and help that people at the FCC placed in me. So both the Office of Economic Analysis and later the Space Bureau people were truly exceptional.
So you did this exciting work and then you're back in school now, chasing your major now. How did you end up with electrical and computer engineering or electrical computer engineering?
I changed quite a few times. So at Olin, we don't have to declare our major until the end of sophomore year. And what that meant for me was 2 years of trying to figure out who I am. When I first came to Olin, I was like, I want to do like automation. I want to do robotics. So again, huge recommendation. Anyone, if you have a gut feeling that you want to do something, please, please, please do something like it as soon as possible to test that gut feeling. Because I took robotics classes and I was like, really love the faculty, really love the people. But if anyone has dealt with ROS before, which is pretty much like the language of how robots talk to each other, it is painful. The syntax is not great. And I was like, I do not want to do this. So then I was like, okay, I'm no longer a robotics major. How about CS, computer science? We have an engineering with CS degree. I was like, okay. So I took a ton of CS classes and I was like, I really enjoy coding, but I don't want to do this forever. Like coding for me is like a tool. It helps me do other things. So my question was, well, what's that other thing that I want to do? And then what I settled on is, well, I actually really just like circuits, although I am god awful at doing circuit math. Like some days I'll forget, I'm like, does voltage work that way? Does it? So, but just circuits to me were really elegant, and specifically antennas. The fact that we can transmit energy through space and like communicate either like how you and I are doing right now, or communicate with a satellite like thousands to millions of miles away, just kind of always blew my mind. And the more I learned about it, I was like, okay, I like this. So I was like, okay, electrical computer engineering, I can still take quite a few computer science courses, but it really lets me delve into my curiosities of how circuits and how antennas work. So that's where I've ended up now. I'll phone you back if I change another three times before I graduate. But eventually I'm going to have to lock down my requirements so I can actually get a diploma, unfortunately.
So where are you headed? What's next?
That's a great question. That's what I ask myself every morning. I definitely... So this summer, I'm first looking to kind of the summer of this year, because I've done research for a summer, I've done government for a summer, And now I kind of want to complete the trifecta and find a private internship somewhere. I want to really kind of get that experience of, okay, what is it like working for a private entity? And kind of test my gut feeling of, is this something I want to do? Mm-hmm. And then kind of past that, I mean, anything can change based off of that experience. But overall, I don't think I'll be satisfied with an undergraduate degree, especially with how much I kind of enjoy exploring questions and talking to brilliant people and doing research. So I'm definitely, right now I'm thinking to go and do a PhD. What in specifically what yet? That's kind of to be decided, but definitely something engineering related at the very least.
Let me ask you this question. You know, you've been doing undergraduate research for now what, 2+ years, 3 years?
Yep.
You count your summer, maybe close to that.
Yep.
How has that changed the way you approach education, and how is it impacting your own education?
It's hard because in some ways it makes it harder to do a traditional education, because in addition to my classes, so those timetables in my head, I also have to be constantly thinking about, okay, I need to respond to reviewer comments on this paper and this paper, and I need to find grant funding. Like anyone that's done like kind of research or managed a laboratory will know kind of the headaches of like, okay, I need to actually pay for this, or I need to pay for publication fees. So it definitely adds a lot more kind of mental load on top mm-hmm. of the regular education. So for me at Olin, I don't do any other clubs. I mean, I do beekeeping and mushroom growing, but those aren't mm-hmm. really clubs. Those are just like, we call them co-curriculars. They're like pseudo classes, but no grades. Just like things led by a professor. But overall, my number one extracurricular commitment is just OSSTP. So on one hand, I think it definitely enriches my education, because the things that I learn in my classes, I can apply and test out in my research with like live examples. And then the mm-hmm. tricks and stuff that I learned in my research, like learning Python, learning R, learning other coding languages, really help in the classroom. So they're definitely mm-hmm. complementary, but they can definitely increase the workload and burden of getting an undergraduate education at the same time. So you have to be very careful not to just burn out, because that's probably like the most dangerous thing, to do something you love to the point that you start to hate it. And that's probably what I'm most careful about, is trying to keep things within moderation, although it's hard.
No, fair enough. But would you say overall it's net positive?
Definitely. I would always do it no matter what. Just when it gets to crunch week, sometimes I have regrets, but when I look at it in the rearview mirror, I'm always like, that was amazing. That, like, talking to people, pursuing a question and writing about it, and really just kind of writing, like proving and writing about why did you do this, like explaining. I feel like those are all skill sets which we need in our day-to-day lives, and it's nice to polish them through doing research.
Well, let's switch gears a little bit mm-hmm. and take all this experience and sort of convert it into some kind of advice for high schoolers. What would you tell them as they are navigating their way to college?
Yeah, I mean, to any high schooler like applying right now, best of luck. You're applying in a completely kind of different age than when I applied, because when I applied, SAT was still the predominant standard. It was COVID, so everything was kind of in flux. But I guess to start, I would have never ended up in OSSTP if I first off didn't send that first thank you email. So looking back, like if there was an inflection point, say thank you to the people that have made a difference in your life, or even like having a nice conversation with someone. And someone made a good point that made you thank them for it. They're adding value to you. to your life, you've gained something from them. And they probably gained something from you too. So just show your appreciation when you can. And who knows, maybe the next email you receive from them is an invitation to join their research lab. So definitely being nice and gracious is one of my best advice. Also just staying curious. Mm-hmm. If you're doing research for like a reason other than like curiosity, it's probably going to be much more kind of painful if you don't actually want to learn more about the thing you're looking into. So really, while you're in high school, I know it's so, so difficult to like figure out where do I want to, society is making me decide at 18 what I want to potentially do for the rest of my life. This is terrifying. I was in the right. same shoes. I was like, this, who came up with this system? This is stupid. But the important thing is that you're not locked in stone in college. So it's important to keep as much of an open mind as possible and really think about what skills am I, even if I change my path, what skills am I going to take from path to path? What's going to be the most useful things for me? For me, that was like knowing how to do graphing and a little bit of data science. No matter what I've done, I've always needed to like analyze something or draw a conclusion from it. So really just figure out what complements, no matter where you want to end up, what are you going to use to get there?
Great piece of advice. Anything more? Anything else?
I guess also definitely after class or whenever you have the energy, kind of like schedule. I know it's much harder at other schools. I'm at a very fortunate place, but talk to your professor, and most of the times they'll have research that they're doing. And even if you're at a graduate student dominated institution, if you prove that you're willing to learn, if you're willing to put in the work, one of the biggest things that people misunderstand is they think to do research, you have to be the smartest person in the world. Yeah. that's far from the truth. I can tell you that like people in my lab make me like cry at how brilliant they are. But the reason why I'm here with them is really just, you need to have kind of tenacity, because the people which we recruit now for research projects like into OSSTP aren't necessarily the people who like are going to get the next Nobel Prize. We're looking for people who can finish what they start. And if you're able to do that, then you're better than majority of other people which are trying to do research. Just showing that you're willing to commit to something.
Okay, so Philip, we're going to start winding down. Mm-hmm. Before I let you go, though, would love to hear some fond memory or anecdote or vignette, something from the past few years that you think the listeners might enjoy.
I think I would definitely, now that in a couple of days I'm going to be flying down to Washington, D.C. to go to this research conference. I actually presented research there last year as well. And kind of with that in both my front and rear view mirror, one of the memories I look fondly into most is the first conference. I showed up a bit late. I wasn't presenting that day, but I was sitting in on other people presenting their research. And I just sat at a random table while a person was giving their presentation. And then afterwards, I got to know the two people on the left and my right. And it turns out the person on my left was one of the head psychologist professors at MIT. The person on my right, completely there for unrelated reasons, was the like one of the lead professors of MIT CSAIL, which is one of their computer science laboratories. And we were at a talk about internet disinformation ethics. And it was just like, just again, I think this highlighted to me, like, we all research very different things. And we were all at a topic. We were all at a talk, which was very much so not our research area. Yet it was probably like one of the best experiences chatting with them, getting their viewpoints on that, on the research at hand.
Yeah.
Was so much fun. It was so enriching. And I think it really just kind of impressed on me that research is not through one lens. Oftentimes you can get quite focused on just seeing things as an engineer, but like hearing the perspective of someone with a psychologist background, or hearing the perspective of someone with an ethics philosophy background, really just made my understanding of a subject so much better. And it also really just endeared on me to seek out alternative viewpoints and experiences from across academia whenever you see a subject.
Oh, that's a great story and absolutely true. So, Philip, this has been just a wonderful conversation. Loved hearing all the stories, and you went into so much detail, and thanks for sharing, and I'm sure the listeners will thank you immensely. So I definitely want to keep in touch with you, see if you change your major.
Of course.
In the next few years.
we'll have to put like three, however many times I change my major, we'll have to put asterisks.
But anyway, take care, be safe. Thank you so much, and good luck in everything that you do.
Yeah, thank you so much. Have a great rest of your day. Bye.
Bye.
Hi again. Hope you enjoyed our podcast with Philip Post and his engineering journey at Olin College. Philip picked engineering over liberal arts when he came to college. Olin College gave him the space to explore a variety of courses before declaring his major at the end of his sophomore year. His undergraduate research started making sense of the space filings database at the FCC, which grew in scope and size and eventually led to an internship at the FCC. Philip's work also brought him the Goldwater Scholarship, which not only validated him as a researcher, but it also valued his work researching government databases. I hope Philip's undergraduate experience inspires you and you can explore whether Olin College is a fit for your own college journey. For your questions or comments on this podcast, please email podcast@almamatters.io. Thank you all so much for listening to our podcast today. Transcripts for this podcast and previous podcasts are on almamatters.io/podcasts. To stay connected with us, subscribe to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify, or visit anchor.fm/almamatters to check us out. Till we meet again, take care and be safe. Thank you.
College Matters.
Alma Matters.